Welcome back to the Hoops Temple podcast. Y'all know us. I'm Nathan Schwartz saying good evening from Michigan.
You have to introduce us, Nate. We're not self-sustaining like this.
You're the host for a reason, Nate.
Joining me from Sacramento, Aaron Schroeder.
Good afternoon, guys.
Joining us from New Zealand, Dylan Williamson.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Last week, or 2 weeks ago now, we did Eastern Conference win projections. This week, we're starting with Western Conference win projections, and we're going to start off with a team that we are all loving, coming in at the very bottom. It seemed like we tried to see who could get the least. The San Antonio Spurs with an average wins of 17 in our projections. Aaron, do you want to start us off? Because you have them being historically bad at 15 wins.
The Spurs.
Aaron knows a thing or two about the worst teams in NBA history.
That's
done a lot of research.
That's true, Dylan. 20 years of research.
He did. He had to prop up the Kings because that's the problem, is they're never this bad. They're always that's like middle tier bad.
That's true. With the Spurs, they know what they're doing. They're not an idiot franchise. They're going to be tanking intentionally. If they're going to be bad, if they want Wembanyama, they're going to go for it really hard. They added nobody. They drafted a pretty good player in Sohan. They lost Lonnie Walker and DeJounte Murray. And that's the roster. And I think they're going to intentionally be bad as hard as they can, possibly harder than we've seen in a long time.
Yeah, you can sort of tell which of the teams are not trying to win by like how much their roster makes sense. Like we talked about the Pacers last week, how their entire roster is just like shooting guards and centers. And it's like sort of the case for the Spurs as well. Like they just like have no point guards. Like Trey Jones is probably going to start like by default. It's a guy that averaged 6 points per game, and he's going to be their starting point guard playing 40 minutes or something. Because there's absolutely no one else, like unless you know Josh Primo is going to be a point guard or something. The one thing that's like concerning in picking them as the worst team in the league is like Greg Popovich always gets pretty good defense out of his teams, and Jakob Poeltl is still on the team, and he's like one of the best rim protectors in the league. And so just by having like a guy that can defend the rim, like your defense is not going to be that bad, which is a concern. So hopefully they can find a way to get Poeltl out away from the rim.
I'm sure they'll trade him or trade the pieces around him, or he'll strain his calf in week two and never play again. It's going to be tanking like we've never seen. The Spurs are all in.
Yeah, Poeltl is the fourth longest tenured player on their team. Like it's Poeltl, Josh Richardson, Doug McDermott, and Gorgui Dieng. Those are the only guys with more than five seasons under their belt.
Man, what a roster. That's a hell of a veteran group.
Yeah, the guys this will be their fifth year. Kenneth Bates Diop, Elise Johnson, and Zach Collins, which I'm not even sure that counts for Zach Collins because of the years that he's missed. Young team. This is not a particularly great team. I'm kind of here for it. I want to see what Jeremy Sochan can do. You know, he's got a great story, very multicultural ethnicity. Like, I'm interested. Get the Scottie Pippen, Dennis Rodman, Scottie Barnes comps. Like, let's just be weird with it. Let's see how it goes. But if they get 20 wins, I might have to eat a sock or something. Like that's not going to happen.
The Zach Collins deal is just strange. It was strange when it happened. It's not an overpay. It's just kind of an odd fit for a team that was kind of going down, and they picked him up, and he's kind of been whatever.
Yeah, maybe he can start off strong, and they can flip him for something.
You're telling me you don't like Doug McDermott and Josh Richardson as your primary wings?
No, but I think Doug McDermott and Josh Richardson both have like a little bit of trade value.
They do, and they will, guarantee it.
I don't know what their deals are like, but
I could find that for you real quick.
Yeah, it looks like Doug McDermott was $13.7 million last season, and Josh Richardson, $11.6 million.
Richardson's an expiring $12 million deal. McDermott has 2 years left, $13.7 million.
So maybe if someone wants to get off bad money,
totally could.
You know,
yeah, that's definitely a good like vehicle to get worse as well, as you package those contracts for someone that absolutely sucks and hopefully get back some assets.
Russell Westbrook?
No, Pop won't trade with the Lakers.
Free team trade? the Spurs get Westbrook.
I don't think he'll do it. I don't think he wants Westbrook. Like this man has said he will never trade with the Lakers, so I just don't think it's happening.
I respect that level of pettiness that like he puts aside what's best for the team to just say fuck you to the Lakers.
Yeah.
You think if there was any time to trade with the Lakers, it's now when they've got like a GM that sucks. Like, you can just go and fleece them and screw them over more.
Well, the Lakers basically offered the AD haul for Kawhi, and he's like, no, I'm going to take DeMar DeRozan and Jakob Poeltl. Fuck LA. You could have Brandon Ingram and Lonzo Ball right now, but no.
Did they also pick Lonnie Walker with the pick that they got from the Raptors?
They might have.
Because that'd be kind of funny that now he's on the Lakers.
He's got to get over this at some point. These aren't the Lakers of old. Him and LeBron have a great relationship. You know what? Does he even like Michael Jordan? You know, maybe he just wants to say fuck Mike.
I'm trying to see who they drafted with that pick. It was the Keldon Johnson.
Oh, nice.
Much better.
Yeah.
Have you ever gone down the rabbit hole of Michael Jordan trading to teams that beat LeBron?
I've not.
There's like this Reddit conspiracy of Jordan just doesn't want LeBron to win. So he's like made deals that favored the other teams that ended up beating LeBron in the finals multiple times. And it's like, this is just his way to maintain six rings, is that he's he's influencing, put his like finger on the pulse of like, you know what, my team's gonna suck, but no one's gonna catch me.
Sounds like Mike, we have some more bad teams to talk about. Who's the next bad team? Some more tanking teams out west.
We do. Falling in the rankings since we lasted this 2 weeks ago was our updated version of the Thunder, who have now lost Chet Holmgren to the whole season. Dylan, you actually had an interesting take when we started messaging each other about this.
Yeah, I feel like my stance is fairly consistent in that, you know, like pretty much all rookies suck. And so if we're like considering win totals, then having one fewer rookie that's going to get big minutes is probably a good thing. Like, they don't really have a lot of, maybe by design, like the Thunder haven't set up a lot of big men on the roster, I guess, with the idea that then it forces the coach to play Chet a whole lot. But now that he's out, they might actually have to play some guys that like aren't terrible. You know, we're going to get like Derek Favors minutes or Mike Muscala minutes. Like, those guys aren't good NBA players, but they're better than, you know, the random young tanking players that the Thunder usually play. And so I kind of wonder if this actually makes them better.
Nah, you know they're just going to go all in on Usman Dieng and
yeah.
Pokuševski and Robinson Earl will get in those big minutes.
That's my real hope is Usman gets minutes.
I thought about moving their win total, but I didn't. It's not going to affect anything. 25 wins. That's what I had put out. What did you guys say?
I had them at 26 win before this, and then I dropped them down. And my thought dropping them from 26 to 20 is not that he's going to make this big of a difference, but that like I thought that OKC would want to at least show progress and maybe start the season off going like 10-10 or something before going hard into the tank. And now I just feel like it's already dictated. They're going to go for Wembanyama. So they're not going to have any early season.
I totally see it happening. I'm just not sure what kind of injury they're going to make up for SGA this time around. That they've run out of strategies to get him to sit. They're just going to beat him up in the locker room or something. Sam Presti just jumps him after one of these games.
I kind of wonder if this is the year they trade him.
You were talking about that. Nate had texted me the other day, tossing that out there.
I just, you know, you can't keep being this bad this long. Like he's good. SGA is good. We all liked his game. I forget if we quite had him in the top 30 or just outside that bubble, but you can't keep sitting him. Like these injuries, we all kind of know they're fake. Like you do it once, you're like, ah, that's not good. You do it twice and you're like, okay, that needs to be the last time. They do it three times in a row. Like as a player, you just got to kind of shake your head at that. So I kind of wonder if this is the year that they trade him. And I think I know the team they should trade him to. And it's the New Orleans Pelicans.
Yeah, I love that. I love the spot for him. SGA, Ingram, and Zion heading forward.
Yeah, the Pelicans have a lot of picks. They've got some assets. They have their draft pick from this past year. So, you know, they can always do the classic Minnesota Timberwolves thing and trade another first round pick by using their first that they drafted this year.
9 first round picks or 10 first round picks, however much it was.
Still so dumb. But like Dyson Daniels, you know, pair him up with Dang, you know, get the
Aussie
Dylan
boys.
Was that league? Yeah.
NBL?
One, yeah. I thought one of them was with New Zealand, so I don't want to quite say the Aussie boys.
NBL's correct.
NBL. Yeah, get them back, you know, they were on opposite teams, but like, you know, let's get the partnership going and continue to knock it forward another year. Just my thoughts.
I think they kind of have to do that. I don't, unless they're going to sit SGA again, which would just be preposterous at this point. There's no way they're going to be the worst team in the league. There are other bad teams that don't have one of the 30 best players in the league on their roster. So.
Mm-hmm.
Wonder if this is like where the flattened lottery odds kind of help them out a little bit, that they don't have to be the very worst team to still get the same odds. Like if SGA wins them, you know, five more games, the rest of the roster's bad enough that they're still not going to rise out of the top, you know, five in lottery odds.
I don't know. They've kind of had that Orlando-Sacramento luck of just, you know, falling right behind where the good picks are and then like not quite far enough where they reach and get like the next good guys, you know. Kind of that 3 through 8, the range where the Suns were in for the longest time, where they're taking Marquise Chris, Dragan Bender, and, you know, Eli Oboko, like those picks. But yeah, we got more bad teams here. So a little bit of a flip-flop in order then. You guys actually both had the Houston Rockets as the second worst team. It's my positivity of them with 25 wins that brings them up to an average of 22.5. So we're looking at 25 from me, 21 from Dylan, and 22 from Aaron.
How far ahead of
them? Why so pessimistic?
How far ahead are they above the Thunder for average wins?
0.33.
Mm-hmm. I'll take it.
It's like right on top of each other. They're both 22 point something. It's 22 2/3 and 22 and 1/3.
Gotcha. It's a bad team. They're not good. They're not good now. It's going to take a little bit. They're still cooking something up. They didn't lose anyone they really played. Christian Wood is gone. They added the scraps of the Mavericks and Ty Washington, who I like, and Jabari Smith, who I like. But this team is going to struggle to score points. They're going to just, it's going to be tough, especially as Jabari kind of gets used to that, the offense in the NBA.
And you combine that with the fact that they were the worst defense in the league last year. And, you know, they haven't added good players. They had some nice rookies. They had a, you know, I guess a decent draft. Even if even if I didn't end up being as high on Jabari. But yeah, like they're gonna play their rookies and they're gonna suck. They'll struggle to score because they don't have a point guard, and the defense will be terrible as well.
I love Dylan's reviews so much. I could listen to him just tear apart teams all day.
Did you know that they signed Marquise Chris?
Man, I cannot believe he's still in the NBA.
The Christian Wood replacement.
Listen, we need a free Boban movement. We got to get him out of there.
No, he's going to get minutes.
We just got to get him
they're
out
gonna,
of there.
No, they're going to play him. It's important that he stays.
Is Şengün going to start at the five for them? Or are they, is Mikey's Chris actually the starter?
This is going to be such a bad defense. I'm just, oh my God. I'm cracking up just thinking about it. Oh my God.
Bruno Fernando? It's not good. It's really not good. But if you watch some of their summer league games, Josh Christopher was freezing out guys. Josh Christopher is like, this is, you know, I'm going to be the scorer. This is going to be my team. And you're like, man, this is not a good mindset for you to have. Like,
yeah, it's big Deion Waiters vibes.
Yeah.
Man, Deion Waiters.
You guys remember that legendary moment where the Thunder just wouldn't pass Deion Waiters the ball?
No,
was
I don't.
Was that Deion Waiters? I feel like it was. Like, they would just avoid passing to him, all the players on his own team, because he just, like, wouldn't share the ball. They would just avoid passing to him at all costs. Like, they wouldn't inbound the ball to him. When, like, the play dictated that they passed to him, they'd, like, try to pass to someone else. They just, like, froze him out.
He probably still took the most shots on the team that game. Yeah. He still found a way.
Yeah. I've been cleaning up some of my writing that I'm going to rerun again. Hoop Social. We'll go check it out at some point. But I've been reading back through, because I did like a full team by team breakdown of the first season in the NBA. And there was a guy, Joe Fulks. And the way that they just describe him is like, yeah, once he touched the ball, it's just gone.
Jumping Joe Fulks.
Jumping Joe Fulks. Like he was going to shoot it. And it worked. He was like the best player in the league. And like I kind of comp him to like a modern James Harden. But like you just read this stuff and like people talk about him. And they're like, yeah, you know, we just kind of understood how to run the play. Because the play was get the ball to Joe and then Joe just did it. And like there are a lot of guys that think they're like that. And it's not good for a lot of young players to have.
You think Deion Waiters is trying to copy Jumpin' Joe Fulks? That was his inspiration.
I just love reading about old players, because you read something written in the 50s and there's like always the quote from the old guy and they're like, these young players don't know how to play team ball and defense.
I was saying,
and it's like the 20s players talking about the 50s players. Then you read like in the 70s, it's the 50s players talking about the 70s players, and it's like, we won because we play defense and team basketball. And it's every year. It's always the old guys. And they always say it about the younger generation. And like, as fans, we're sitting here, we're looking at the Houston Rockets. We're like, they don't play defense or team ball. They're going to suck. You feel like at some point, people just need to figure this out.
But it won't be this year.
No.
That reminds me of Steven Jackson going on ESPN. He's like, in my era, LeBron would have averaged 15, would have locked him up as if they didn't play together at the same time for like 10 years.
Yeah.
Steven Jackson was drafted in 2001. He retired in 2014. He's talking about his, he's talking about his era. It's just so strange. I just want to point out.
2002 was a different time.
LeBron wouldn't have lasted in 2002.
I want to point out that Eric Gordon is still on the Rockets. He's making $20 million a year. I believe he's an expiring contract. I imagine he will be traded.
I think he's, let's see. I don't think he is expiring. He's got a non-guarantee for next year.
Okay.
So he's either going to expire or cut. You can't keep him.
Yeah. I hope someone trades for him.
Yeah, I do too.
I wanted the Lakers to get him with like the THT salary filler. He'd be a good fit for them.
You know who got THT? Our fourth worst team, the Utah Jazz, which is kind of ironic because only Aaron actually had them as the fourth worst. I had them as third. Dylan, you have them as fifth. I've got 23 wins. You have 34 wins. Aaron, you kind of split the middle and took the 26. They averaged out to 27.6 win. How good do you think they're going to be with just Mitchell? Do you think they're keeping Mitchell?
They're really hard to project because you've got to firstly make an assumption on what's going to happen with Mitchell. Regardless, even if they keep him and they play all their guys and they try to win, like the defense is going to be terrible. They don't have a center. Like they're starting a rookie, I guess, at the five, which is just, you're guaranteed to be awful. But if they play their guys and they play Donovan Mitchell, like he's one of the best scorers in the league. Their offense is not going to be terrible if they play Donovan Mitchell and Bogdanovic and Jordan Clarkson and some of these veteran guys. They're going to be able to put up points. And so then it just comes down to, are they actually going to play their guys? Are they going to, you know, play seriously? Is Mitchell going to care enough to try? Or is this going to be sort of like, maybe more like Washington last year where they had theoretically a really good player and not much else around him. And then that guy put up a lot of points, but just did not contribute to winning basketball at all.
I kind of assume that you're going to trade Mitchell, which is a little problematic because I take the wins away from Utah, but I don't assign them to anyone else. But I'll have to adjust that when the trade happens, and I'm assuming it will.
Yeah, I really hope so.
I'm both very low on them because I do think they're going to trade Mitchell. But I also just think that even if Mitchell is still there, like, is the rest of this roster that much better than the Thunder roster, you know, around Shea? Like, I kind of think Mitchell and Shea are pretty similar. I mean, Mitchell's probably a little bit higher, but...
It's a great point.
I don't think they're really going for it. And they just have so many sales. Like, do you really want Mike Conley? Really want Bojan Bogdanovic? Like,
those guys are good traders.
There's a second Lakers deal in here for them. Like, flip Bojan and Mike for Westbrook and take some picks. Like, they have the room to just continue to sell things off.
Yeah. The hard part, though, becomes is that those guys are so properly paid. Bogdanovic, $19.5 million. Yeah. Mike Conley, $22.6 million. Like, it's not easy to move guys who make that much money, even if they are pretty good contributors. It's sort of a trend that I've noticed around the league is there's not that much just straight up terrible money like there has been in previous seasons. Like, good teams don't have those guys that are just on $18 million. You know, there aren't Evan Turners and Luol Deng's just terrible money that teams can move for a better player. It's really hard to match salary as a good team and not give up anything important. And so it's hard to see how exactly these guys would get moved. In an ideal world, like, they'd all be gone. But if they're not, then a team of Mike Conley, Donovan Mitchell, Malik Beasley, Bojan Bogdanovic, Jordan Clarkson, Jared Vanderbilt, like, those are some pretty good players. They could win some games. Right.
Yeah, I probably should have them in the 30s if they all stick around.
Yeah.
I can't imagine they stick around.
Yeah, that's the hard thing is you've got to make a strong assumption, an affirmative assumption as to the direction that the team's going to take when it's really hard to say how they're going to play out the season. Like, there's a world in which they're a play-in team, and there's a world in which they trade everyone and they're the worst team in the league.
Dallas could make a play pay for Mike Conley. I don't know that they necessarily want Mike Conley, but like, you know, Tim Hardaway Jr., Davis Bertans, they've got some guys on larger deals. I mean, even Christian Wood at $14 million. Like, you don't have to add too much to get his salary to match if you want like just a smooth, steady ball handler to kind of be out there next to Luka and run it with when he's off the floor.
Would Hardaway and Bertans match for Bogdanović and Conley?
Hardaway's at 19 and Bertans at 16, so pretty close.
Yeah, but Dallas also probably don't want to take on extra money. I think they're right up against the ticks.
Luka asks the Mavs for Jalen Brunson. They're like, we have Jalen Brunson at home, and it's Mike Conley.
Hey, it's time for Cuban to nut up or shut up. I mean,
if your backup point guard's Mike Conley, then you're not doing too bad.
Yeah. I hate to do this to you, Aaron, but the fifth worst team in the West on all of our boards, pretty much, with a combined average of 34.6 wins, are the Sacramento Kings. You've got them at 39 win. Talk me through it.
This one stung, guys. I know you guys aren't being malicious about this, but I couldn't believe it. I guess the overarching question is, what do you guys think went right last season? For them to be even close to their win total last season, you must think that that's about as good as they could have played, when I think we kind of failed in every single aspect of basketball as a team last year. From injuries to just players playing like shit, to having the worst coach in the league, then firing him, then having a mediocre interim coach, to trading all of our players. I think it's a miracle we even got to 30 wins last year.
See, I disagree. Luke Walton was a great coach.
He's a fucking horrible coach, Nate. The hell is wrong with you? I want to ask you guys, and I've been preparing this, and I'll try to keep it sort of condensed. Now, do you guys know how many players the Kings played last season? And they just logged minutes.
Like 19?
Any guesses, Dylan?
A lot of teams played a lot of players last year because it was COVID.
Yeah, because of COVID. Like, 19 is a lot for a normal year. But with last year, like, lots of teams broke. So I'm going with 20.
It was 26. It's 26. It's tons of guys in and out. Do you know who led the team in rebounding? Total rebounds.
Oh, I'm going to go with, I don't know, like, Chimaze Metu?
Harrison Barnes. Bagley.
It is Harrison Barnes, our fucking small forward. Leads the team in rebounds. we are horrible, just horrible in the paint. And I really want to note on that. Now, we have two centers that cracked 1,000 minutes. They're right about base identical minutes. Any swings on those guys?
Alex Lynn and Tristan Thompson.
Metu?
Metu did play, but he was primarily a power forward. Alex Lynn, 620 minutes, and Thompson, 455, which we have to note that Tristan Thompson almost played 500 minutes. For I had to watch Tristan Thompson play basketball for that long. Any other swings on who was holding down the five for the 30-win Kings last year? We don't even know. No one even knows. No. Now, Nate, let me ask you this. If the Lakers play Damian Jones 1,000 minutes next season, do you think you guys are doing all right? Do you think that's a good sign for the Lakers? Would you be thrilled with that? Would you be happy if Damian Jones played 56 games?
You weren't on the pod last year, but I went crazy about Damian Jones like 2 weeks in LA because it was the best center minutes we had all year.
Okay.
And when we didn't resign him, I was livid. And then, I'm fine with it.
Okay. We had Rashawn Holmes for 45 games. He played pretty well. It was 10-7 on 66% shooting. And then Damian Jones. Now, I'm going to ask you just one question. Is Domantas Sabonis better than Damian Jones? Just answer the question. Yes or no, Dylan?
Yeah.
Yes on that one.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. We have the center position covered. We had arguably the worst shooting guard play in the entire league last year. Looking at these numbers is atrocious. Of the players that played their minutes at shooting guard, we had one second. Justin Holiday played 25 games, 25 minutes a game. What was his field goal percentage?
I'm guessing 42%.
Dylan, any takers?
Yeah, like right around 40. He's a low efficiency scorer.
Yeah, he fucking is. Justin Jackson shot 35% last year. He was awful. He was so bad. Dante DiVincenzo, everyone's favorite Warrior. What was he shooting?
He was really bad.
He was really bad.
And you guys really pissed him off too.
Yeah, we did. He was a walking brick. He shot 36% from the field. And Buddy Hield played 55 games at 29 minutes a game. What percent did he shoot from the field?
Well, what percentage of his shots were three? You know, I don't even care. He shot like 36% from three, right?
He shot 37% from three.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm guessing like probably only like 39% total.
38%.
Because like he shot.
Go ahead, Dylan.
He shot mostly threes.
Who's going to start at the two this year? Is Davion the starting two?
I'd say Monk or Herder.
I hope not.
I don't think he's just, I think he's probably backup point guard. Buddy Hield shot 38%. Jeremy Lamb, our other kind of shooting guard. Too. Yeah, I don't think he's on the team anymore, but he shot 40%.
Leaving
us with a single shooting guard that actually didn't play like dog shit last season at Terrence Davis with 42% from the field. Now, I want to ask a yes or no question. Do you think Malik Monk and Kevin Herter will be better than the names I just listed? Dylan?
Offensively, yes.
Offensively, yes. Now, I want to go back to something, Dylan, that you said on the Eastern Conference pod, where you said the Hornets got Steve Clifford. And he's a good defensive coach. And hopefully that would help mend some of their lack of defense. Do you think that Mike Brown, the Kings' new coach, can help shore up the defense a little bit?
I think they will not be the worst defense in the league.
I'll take it. Do you know how many games Domantas Sabonis played for the Kings last year?
12.
It was 15. Just 15. And De'Aaron Fox played in just 59. We're playing Marvin Bagley and Buddy Hield. We're actually playing these guys. That's my whole spiel, is that the team was off so bad last season. The fact that you think they're only going to improve by two wins is incredible.
So here's the thing.
Go ahead.
Wins do not exist in a vacuum.
I know.
Wins come based on how many teams I think you can beat and how many teams I think will beat you. And if we look back at them last season and we look at where those wins came from, a lot of those wins came against Western Conference teams that were struggling due to injuries. They got two wins off the Clippers, two wins off the Lakers, two wins off the Pelicans before their trade, two wins off of Phoenix is when guys were out with COVID, two wins off the Blazers when Lillard was injured. That's 10 of their wins.
But they're much better. I get it. But you could say that for anybody, though. You really could. You could go around for circumstances.
But so you've masterfully crafted all of the circumstances that hurt the Kings, and all of these other teams also had those circumstances that hurt them last season.
That's true.
And so if we're projecting this year and we're projecting with some modicum of expectations of health or, you know, circumstances, because like, hey, let's say LeBron misses 1 week and you have back-to-back games against the Lakers that week, you're going to be like probably two games better than what you were supposed to be, because the Lakers with and without LeBron are very different stories. But if we're looking at the season as an expectation, we're saying LeBron's most likely going to be healthy and you're most likely going to play him, we're expecting those two games to go to the Lakers, or maybe at least be a 50-50 split.
I get it.
So I love what the Kings have done. I think the Kings are in the toughest division in basketball right now. And I mean, maybe the Atlantic. And actually, Atlantic's probably tougher. Or with the Nets.
We can't be in the toughest division if the Kings are in it.
I mean, the Warriors have a good chance of repeating. The Suns, provided they can get over their Ayton debacle, will have been one of the best teams in the league. The Clippers with a healthy Kawhi and Paul George, and the Lakers with a healthy LeBron and AD. That is four teams that you could say will have home court in the playoffs, or, you know, could theoretically be a dark horse to a championship. I know we all have the Lakers a little bit lower. We'll get to them in a minute. But, yeah, I mean, that's four teams that if you said, hey, they won the 2023 title, you wouldn't be that surprised.
Nate, I would be shocked if the Lakers won the 2023 title. I would scream and cry. There's no way. I totally get it. You know, that's honestly the toughest part, is when you actually assign the wins. And I feel like it sucks, because I really love what the Kings have done for the most part in the offseason, actually signing people and making trades that aren't just bash your head against the wall stupid. But man, tough West. Tough Western Conference.
Yeah. And then the tough thing, I was talking to you guys before the pod about what Ben Golliver was saying on Real GM Radio. One of the points that he made that I kind of agree with is it's kind of rough, because 3 through 10, I really like this team. Like if you could swap the Kings 3 through 10 for the Lakers 3 through 10, the Lakers would be the championship favorites.
Yeah.
It's just comes down to, I don't really, like, De'Aaron's kind of been up and down. He had some really good seasons and some poor seasons. Hopefully he can be better again. I've never liked Sabonis. He doesn't impact the game positively on offense and is a negative defender. If he's going to be your starting five, then the defense sort of caps out fairly low, which is where I had them as the 27th ranked defense. Maybe a little bit rough because they were 21st last season, but they were 30th the year before and probably have one of the probably the worst defensive starting center in the league. And so maybe I'm too low on their offense. I think you have convinced me there. Like, they picked up a bunch of quality offensive players. Like, Monk is going to help. Hurd is going to help. Harrison Barnes is always a good player. Sabonis will play more than 15 games. Hopefully Fox can be better with a little bit more stakes. They've got Matthew Dellavedova on the bench, providing great vibes.
Absolutely.
But yeah, ultimately, like, there are a lot of really good teams in the West, and it's your best players that win you games. And I think I'd take the two best players on every single team that we haven't mentioned over Fox and Sabonis. As much as I do like their depth,
yeah,
I think they're going to struggle defensively, and the offense is not going to be enough to hold them up. The other thing to note, too, is last season they outperformed their point differential by 2.5 games, so they had some luck. They're the point differential of a 26.5 win team, and I predicted them for 32, so I am projecting a decent improvement.
Pretty fair. I love the argument.
They were 27th on defense and 25th on offense.
Not great.
Not great.
Really quickly before we move on, just one last thing, because we haven't mentioned Keegan Murray at all. I think if he just stands in the corner, hits threes, and plays decent defense, I'm happy to have him. But, you know, better than what Maurice Harkless is doing.
Hmm. Yeah. Guys, we have a tie.
Ooh. Exciting.
So Dylan has the Blazers with 44 wins. I have them with 42 wins. And Aaron, you have them with 38. I have the Lakers with 44 wins. Aaron, you have them with 42 wins. And Dylan, you have them with 38, resulting in a 41.333 to 41.333 tie. We're starting off with the bottom. So Aaron, make the case why Portland sucks.
I don't think Portland sucks. I just think there's still a lot of work to do. I like Jeremy Grant. I think for what Dylan said in the past, he's not going to be a 20-point per game guy. He's not going to be a borderline all-star or anything close on a good team. He's kind of going to fall into a smaller role. I like Gary Payton, but I worry about the kind of Warriors effect. It's like when in football, when the Patriots trade away their good players to other less competent franchises, they're never going to be as good. It's kind of a similar thing for the Warriors and Gary Payton. He'll be impactful, not to the extent that he was with Steph and Clay and all those guys. And I like Shaedon Sharpe, but he's just not ready. Yeah, pretty much.
Aaron, why do the Lakers suck?
Because
sorry, not Aaron. And no, you don't get to do this. Dylan gets to tear down the Lakers.
Go ahead.
He'll do it in a much more hurtful way.
They absolutely sucked last year. What was their? Hang on, let me bring up their point differential last year. The point differential of
We have Damian.
Oh. Right, 32 win expected wins last year. The roster sucked last year. It's not really very much better this year. Hopefully LeBron and AD will be able to play more. Patrick Beverley will at least encourage some defense. But like, I'm projecting 6 additional wins when the roster still, you know, kind of sucks. Like, Austin Reeves has been talked about as a starter. There are all these one-way guys. Like, Lonnie Walker is just a terrible fit on this team. That's such a waste of money. He's not really good on either end of the ball. Kendrick Nunn hasn't played in like an entire year. JTA is kind of decent. Troy Brown Jr. can like at least add some athleticism. I hate Thomas Bryant. I hate centers that can't defend. If Thomas Bryant wasn't on the roster, I think I'd have them projected as a better team because at least I could see a way in which they're a good defense. With him as your starting five, like, you're never going to be a good defense.
This is fantastic. I don't have to be the one defending a bad defensive center. Go ahead, Nate. Why is Thomas Bryant going to save the Lakers?
Because he's not going to be a center. I mean, just flat out. Like, I mean, they'll list him at center or whatnot. He will take the physical pounding from, like, the couple times they play Jokic or whoever is actually big. But, like, I mean, Davis will be the defensive center or in all intents and purposes. Like, he will anchor the defense. They'll have Bryant float out and try to chase someone smaller and make Davis's life hard. You know, it's not a very strong team, but we are looking at potentially two top 15 players. And I can't see them if healthy, being sub 500. They've never been sub 500 when healthy. Now, I mean, if you want to say they're not going to be healthy, they're not going to be healthy. But like the rest of the other guys on the roster don't truly matter. Like LeBron and AD's salaries are enough that you're not going to have good other guys. Like Westbrook sucks to have him eating up that huge chunk. But like this is pretty standard. You get two really good guys and you got to kind of struggle to fill out the roster. And if either of your stars get hurt, the Lakers are going to suck. I don't actually have them that much higher. I'm looking at my team's rankings. And yeah, they'd be up one spot from here if we're just straight doing team's rankings. So instead of being 9, they'd be 8. But weirdly enough, I do think getting Pat Beverly is huge because it's a point of attack defender, which LeBron doesn't want to do point of attack defense. He's also recent years been a 38-ish percent three-point shooter. So that's good spacing to have around them. Yeah, it's not great. It's not terrible. But we'll be better than Portland.
The thing with Portland and why I have them over the Lakers is assuming they're like reasonably healthy, they're going to be an awesome offensive team. Like there's at least one end of the floor where they're going to be awesome. So I had them as, let's not forget that last year was terrible, but every year up until then, they've been awesome offensively. They were the second best offense 2 years ago, the last season that Dame played. So I've got them projected as the third best offense in the league. You know, they've got a lot of great offensive players. And 25th on defense is going to be terrible, but that still balances out at being a better team than the Lakers, who I project as being, you know, average on defense. They've got Beverly, they've got Anthony Davis, and, you know, a bunch of guys that can't play defense. And below average on offense. They were the 23rd best offense in the league last year while cheating by playing LeBron at center to juice their scoring. So I've got them being a little bit better. But
if you can go back 2 years and take the Blazers offensive rating, I feel like I could just go back 2 years and take the Lakers number one defensive rating for my case.
If you can go back and bring back KCP and Kuzma and, you know, good defensive centers, that team was built around defense. This team is not. This team is saying, all right, we've got Anthony Davis. Hopefully he's enough because we're not going to put anyone else out that can defend. Until they brought in Patrick Beverley.
Yeah. Although, do you know what the Blazers' average defensive rating has been over the last three seasons?
Oh, terrible. Like 115?
Oh, sorry. Ranking. Their average ranking in the league.
Bottom
last three.
Bottom three probably every year.
Like 25th?
29th.
Jeez.
30, 29, 28. That's not even hard math.
That's the CJ McCollum effect, the Damon CJ effect.
I mean, Grant's going to help there, but Simons and Lillard backcourt, like, sure, they may be a top 10 offense, but they will also most definitely be a bottom 10 defense. And that's in a league where the Sacramento Kings exist.
Yeah. But I mean, top five on one side, bottom five on the other side equals out at about 500. And I've got them better than top five on offense and bottom five on defense.
This team is so top heavy, the Lakers. I mean, we know that. This is a redundant point, really, but without LeBron and Anthony Davis, you take two guys off this team maybe wins 9 games. It's really an abysmal supporting cast, and the foundation is a little shaky. Year 19 LeBron, Anthony Davis, who's very fragile. I'm banking, my prediction assumes that LeBron and AD will be healthy and they'll be really good at basketball, which they've been. But what a disaster around them.
Yeah, and they had one real opportunity to, well, they had a couple. They had a couple opportunities of, you know, options in which they could improve the team. One was the taxpayer mid-level. They spent that on Lonnie Walker on a one-year deal, which means he's not particularly good on either end of the ball, isn't a good fit with LeBron and AD, and if he plays well, then they'll just lose him next year. So I hate that move. They've traded THT for Beverly. That's a great move. That was a win, unequivocal win for the Lakers on that. They traded a guy that won't play for a guy that's going to be their third best player. So that's great. And then the other option is using those two picks to move Westbrook, which they didn't do. And so they added Beverly. That's awesome. The rest of the roster, you know, they swapped out some terrible minimums for some other terrible minimums. Brought in Lonnie Walker, who's worse than Malik Monk and a worse fit. And, like, you know, they had a 32-win expectation last year. It's hard to say that they're going to be, you know, 15 wins better or, you know, 10 wins better.
I want to touch on the Westbrook trade because I feel like it's important. that's the next kind of step, is where they go with that. I feel like he's impossible to move. And everyone said this, and we've gone over this. The Pacers thing is floated out there. I have no idea why Indiana would do that, would give up Turner and Hill.
You get two unprotected first round picks.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. If it is from the Lakers, it makes it especially enticing.
Yeah, plus Westbrook's expiring, so it's not like you're taking on long-term, you know, hindrance. I mean, they could just straight up waive him right away.
I really don't want that trade to happen, because I don't want the media to start jerking off Buddy Hield like he's the next Steph Curry. like he's not the worst defensive two guard in the league.
They wouldn't be the first person to make that comparison.
That's true. That's true.
Sorry, Grandma Chairs. Some vivid imagery.
I knew it to apologize. And you know, Miles Turner is some amazing center. But to mention my grandma, on last pod, we left a message on how to find this pod, and she is an expert now. She's got it all figured out.
Nice. All right. We should probably move on, because it's not going to be a great season for either teams. I said there's championship potential. That's kind of the, you know, if a deal happens there, here or there, the Lakers have a long history of pulling shit out of their ass. It's a charm. So coming in eighth.
Maybe they could pick up some buyout guys.
Coming in eighth for us, we have the Pelicans. I have them at 43 wins. Aaron and Dylan, you both have 45 wins. Does this seem kind of a letdown for them?
It's a team that I wanted to put higher originally, because you kind of love the roster, but it essentially is exactly the same team as last year. Now with Zion, now with CJ McCollum, they could be awesome, but there's something holding me back. I can't place it. Maybe Dylan has some more advanced insight other than a gut feeling.
No, I mean, I think they're going to be quite good on offense. Maybe I'm even underrating them on offense, but there are a lot of good offensive teams in the league. And their defense should be, like, you know, kind of all right. So I had them 11th on offense and 15th on defense, and that's a pretty good team. Like, I could see a world in which they are, like, pushing top five on offense. Zion is, if healthy and playing well, just an awesome offensive player. You add in Ingram and McCollum, who are two very good offensive players as well. And, like, I could, you know, see a world in which we're looking, you know, we're on a podcast in February talking about how New Orleans are the best offense in the league, or one of the best offenses in the league. The defense should be fairly good. They've got some good defensive players, and Valanciunas, who just take up space. They don't really have any great liabilities other than CJ, and Devontae Graham, who hopefully won't play too much.
Hopefully, for their sake, my goodness.
Yeah, but yeah, it's just the West is so deep. Like, there are eight, but every team ahead of them is, you know, a team that is considering themselves in contention for the championship. That's how deep the West is. And so I think even just to get to eight is a mark of being a really good team.
I love the versatility in their roster construction and how every guy really has a role. I mean, I think you might want to merge some of these guys together and build up, but just like looking, all right, starting lineup projection, we're probably talking Valanciunas, Zion, Ingram, CJ, and Herb. And you got like two pretty good defensive wings with Herb and Ingram out there. Valanciunas can do some drop coverage and protect the rim. All right, let's mix that up. Let's go to the bench. Maybe we go small ball. We put out Larry Nance Jr. We can put out Jackson Hayes if we want some more energy. Bo Cruz is on this team now. You know, that's, I saw that training montage. He's a hustler. He'll lock you up. Defense, or, you know, in the reserve guards, we've got Jose Alvarado. Also, have Garrett Temple is kind of like that third string. Hey, you just need someone steady to get out there. And then Trey Murphy, he had a really good close to the season. Like, they're legit 10 deep. They have a very clear, you know, starter bench, like, split. But you can mix and match a lot of their lineups to either go super defensive heavy or have just some phenomenal shooting and offense out there. But like Dylan said, everyone above them, I think, has a dark horse chance of winning the chip this year. And I just don't see that from the Pelicans quite yet. Maybe if Zion is absolutely everything we ever thought he would be, but I'm not willing to put my eggs in that basket.
I love their roster construction. Like you said, you look at it and you're like, this team is almost perfect, but it's like the best cake you ever made baked for 25 minutes. They just need time. I feel like with the trade and with Zion's health, a team like this is going to need a year to kind of get ready. Yeah. And kind of crank it up and, you know, and really become one of the elite teams in the league, even though I really do like their team.
Yeah.
Yeah. And to get any better than this sort of position, as a team, you've either got to be really good on both ends or absurdly good on one end. And like I said, there is a world in which they are absurdly good on offense, although I wouldn't expect it. And then they've just got a lot of guys who are sort of, you know, one-way offensive players. Although I don't think their defense is going to be bad, but they've, you know, they just don't have enough two-way guys to really be, you know, pushing top 10 on both ends of the floor.
Zion's been a bad defender, really quickly. Zion's been a negative defensive player. The CJ Zion combo at the same time is going to score a ton of points, probably let up more points.
But imagine if they got SGA.
It's a different story.
Yeah.
If you get SGA, you've got to take Herb out, though. And I don't want any fewer minutes for Herb.
Yeah, that's fair, because they're probably not taking back CJ. Maybe we can three-team this. But, I mean, I love the fact that Devontae Graham just isn't, hopefully. Like, they have enough depth that I didn't mention when I was running through guys. Like,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, they're so good that Devontae Graham won't play, and he would be a starter on the Lakers.
What a swing, man.
Hurtful.
That we are done.
All right. Well, with that, let's move on to the Dallas Mavericks, who I have at 47 wins. Aaron, you've got them at 44. And Dylan, you've got 50. So we're averaging out at 47 wins and seventh place in the West. I'll be honest, guys. I checked my Dynasty Fantasy League, and I realized I have Christian Wood. So I'm going to become obnoxiously pro Christian Wood if I wasn't already. I know, Dylan, you already wrote the Christian Wood song. I've been riding Christian Wood since I saw him play in the Milwaukee preseason and like years ago. But I think there's a chance that Dallas wins the chip next year. We've already said that. But like there's a lot of ways this can go right. And they have lots of ball handlers. You know, Tim Hardaway Jr. missed most of the season, if not all of the last season. He's another shooter to help space the floor. They can have a three-guard core of him, Dinwiddie, and Luka. And then they've got a lot of options for the bigs to try to mix and match and figure out what's really going to work.
I think the mistake that Dallas made this year is the same mistake that the Lakers made last season, which is not understanding what made them a good team. Dallas were awesome when they were able to get guys who can shoot and defend around Luka. Reggie Bullock and Dorian Finney-Smith and Maxi Kleber, when those guys were out on the floor, like Dallas were unbelievable. They could get stops. Luka's awesome. He can put up points. And they've kind of like, you know, they're moving away from that. They're going with Christian Wood. They promised JaVale McGee that he would start. So now they're playing two bigs, and JaVale's not a good defensive center anyway. Like, he's fine. He's not terrible, but he's not a positive.
Wait, we don't know Wood starting, do we? Have they promised Wood he'll start too?
I guess not, but yeah. I mean, I'd like them a lot better if he doesn't start. But, like, they have added players who don't complement what made them a good team. And they will play at the cost of what did make them good, which is great team defense, guys who bought in, played hard, didn't make mistakes. Like, Dallas was an awesome defense last year when none of us really expected that to be the case. Jason Kidd played the right guys, and they were, like, really well coached defensively. The offense will still be good. They've got Luka. You know, they shouldn't struggle for points, but it was their defense last year that made them awesome. And they have sacrificed that defense for, like, I don't understand the theory.
That's exactly what I was going to say, for the most part. Is I feel like they kind of figured out how to win with Luka, what worked with Luka, what kind of system to build around him, and then they just didn't go that direction. They just went a whole other way with two bigs that, I mean, I think they'll be fine. I have them taking a step back because Jalen Brunson's a really good basketball player. I think that's another thing lost in it. It's not just a system they're missing, but it is a talented player that's just not there anymore.
Yeah, and they lost him for nothing. It's important to remember that Jalen Brunson was a big part of their success last year, and they lost him and didn't get anything back from losing him.
By VORP, he was their second best player. If you guys are big into VORP. I'm a big VORP guy myself.
Yeah, I mean, by any measure, like, he was their second best player, and they lost him in free agency, which is like, losing guys in free agency is so rough just because, you know, at least if a guy forces a trade, you're getting back something. To lose a guy in free agency and not have it be involved in in a sign-in trade is so rough because that's just losing talent for nothing. And so at my prediction, I've got them basically checking in right around exactly where they were last year. which is the point differential of a 51 team.
Do you know who led the Mavs in win shares last season?
Brunson? No.
No, Brunson was third.
Finney Smith. Didn't he just play most games as well?
He was fourth.
You're just going to tell me it's Luka?
No, second.
We run out of players. Who was it?
It's Dwight Powell.
What?
I have no idea. I didn't tell you. It's heavy on the games played, and he played all 82 games.
Okay, yeah. I was going to say he played all 82, because win shares is a cumulative stat, so every game you play, you add up, you know, you increase your win shares, as long as you're not a terrible player for every game you play. And so the fact that he played all 82 is good.
Do you know who was first in win shares per 48? Win shares per 48, number one on Dallas Mavs. I won't waste your time. It was Dwight Powell again. Best player on the team. Wow.
Well, so he does the two things that it really likes in win shares, which is rebound and not miss shots and have low turnovers. There's a reason why like Rudy Gobert is always top 20 is because, and like Robert Williams led the Celtics in win shares. Like this stat does bias towards Bigman to some degrees. But I was silent there for a little bit because I was looking up some profound poetry by the author Little Dicky.
Thank you, Nate.
But if you are familiar with his poem, Professional Rapper, he poses the question of, you know, you've been doing the same shit the same way for a long time, and why don't you look at me like an opportunity to try something a little bit different? The Mavs didn't lose any of their guys. Like, they still have Finney Smith. They still have Reggie Bullock. They still have Dwight Powell, Maxi Kleber. Like, the only thing they lost was Brunson. They can run it back the exact same way and try it. They also can try it with Christian Wood. They also can, you know, try more of it with Spencer Dinwiddie Jr. Not sure why I threw Jr. there. Spencer Dinwiddie. Like, they can try some things. They've got a JaVale McGee. They can do some different stuff this year that I don't think is going to necessarily make them worse. It might hurt them a little bit in the early season, trying to figure it out. But like, if none of this works, you just go back to Old Faithful.
It'll be interesting season either way. They won't be bad. We know they won't be bad.
No.
Yeah. What did our win prediction work out for them at?
47.
Yeah, which is three less than their expected wins last year. They pretty often underperformed their point differential.
Yeah. Well, it's tied up top of the West. Our next team is the Memphis Grizzlies, which I had these two tied, both with 47 wins. Aaron, you've got them at 45. Dylan, you've got them at 55. They're losing Triple J for the first, I don't know how long. I'm off the top of my head here.
I think it's supposed to be right about like half the season.
Yeah, it looks like they announced in June he was going to be out 4 to 6 months, which actually, you know, 4 to 6 month timetable from the end of June. So that's, we're looking somewhere returning between November
maybe
and
it's
January.
Back around like Christmas.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Such a big gap between my prediction and your prediction, Dylan. I think mine just kind of weighed heavily on. I don't think they're going to be elite without Jaren Jackson. I feel like what he was doing defensively is more important and more harder to replace based on their roster than what John Morant was doing. And I like Anthony Melton and I like Kyle Anderson. They lost those guys.
Yeah, their defense could take a reasonable step back this year. They were a pretty awesome defense last year. Let me find the number. They were fifth in defense last year, and narrowly behind Miami for fourth. And so that's sort of their foundation. But like you said, they've lost 2.5 good defensive players. I kind of wonder whether coaching is going to be able to cover up for it. Like when Ja missed a lot of games last year, it really didn't affect them too much. Like they were able to put together system wins, and which you wouldn't expect from a team losing their best offensive player to still be able to score really well. Even with Ja missing all that time, they still ended up as the fourth best offensive team in the league. And so if they keep Ja, like they should be even better. So when I initially eyeballed this, I had them as being one of the best, you know, sort of like top five on offense and on defense. And then scaling back a little bit to account for Jaren being out. But they were still a really good defense when Jaren wasn't on the court. Of course, the counter-argument to that being, well, they also had Kyle Anderson and Anthony Melton.
Well, they also, you know, when he's off the court, they can play Brandon Clark. And Clark is a pretty good defensive player. Clark is also really foul-prone. So if you've got both Junior or Jaren Jackson Jr. and Clark out because Clark gets in foul trouble, now it's who's the third guy up in my mind, which I don't think you can get away with some Tillman and Adams minutes. I think that's going to be really rough. Is Zaire Williams ready for a bigger role? Maybe. He's looked great. They are super high on Jake Oliveira. I don't know that I'm that high on him, but it'll be interesting to see how they can kind of piece things together. They've got one of my favorite players that will never be anything in Killian Tilly. Like, I did start doing draft scout work on him, and I was like, man, this guy just feels like he's gonna be the perfect guy to just jump into the Spurs system and like hit three threes in a game and then not play the next, and then show up and hit like two threes but make two assists. And they didn't come out that year. And then the next year he didn't come out, and the next year he didn't come out. And it's just like, I kept thinking he's the perfect Spurs systems player. I think there's a chance that they could slot him in and he could have like a good two stretch. But I do think really losing Jaren Jackson is going to hurt, because that third defensive forward, I don't think they're that deep there.
Yeah, I mean, their biggest weakness, even with Jaren, is like depth at the forward spot. Mm-hmm. And so to just lose another guy, like, I don't even know who's going to start at the four for them. Like,
It might be
Clark, which I don't love. Yeah. Like, he's I really like him in sort of like a Montrezl Harrell role of like bench scoring big man. And they just have no fours on the roster. Like, they don't have a single guy that I want to play at the four.
Because Tillman should be a four just height wise, but like, he's broad, he's kind of slower.
You don't want to play him with Adams.
Yeah, but it's kind of weird to say, because like, John Morant is definitely their best player, but like, Tyus Jones runs the ship on time. Like, him and Monte Morris have this battle for like internet nerds, like deep cut, you know, perfect reserve point guard that you don't want to be your first point guard. But like, man, if he's your backup, he's good. He's going to keep the ships running.
I mean, yeah, ultimately Memphis were a 56 win expected team last year with their best player missing most of the season. Or not most, but a significant part of the season. Their second best player is out, and they lost some depth, but they should still be really good, at the very least on offense.
Yeah.
A top five offense for sure.
I think if I were to change anything for my standings predictions at this point, is just to transplant some Eastern Conference wins onto the West. Because I agree with everything we're saying. I think I was just, I remember correctly, I did the math, and I was just higher on the East than you guys, which is dumb because the West is a lot better.
It's so hard without like injury, because literally all of these will be better. Like, two of these teams will be worse, whichever two teams sustain the catastrophic injury, and then all of these other teams will be better than what we've got. But with that said, we've got the fifth best team in the West, and all of us agree they're going to be a 50-win team. I have the Timberwolves at 53. Aaron, you've got them at 50. Dylan, you've got them at 51. Do we think they could be a championship contender?
No. Like, can we take a bet on odds they lose in the first round? The best team ever to be guaranteed to lose in the first round.
Whoa. Yeah, that sounds pretty legit.
They did this whole thing, and I just like, it's Karl-Anthony Towns and Gobert. Like, it's too bad. I don't love either of those guys come playoff time.
You're not buying that this is Tyson Chandler and Dirk Nowitzki reincarnate?
No, because it's not. That's gonna be 12 years ago. That's why that worked. They were. It was like 80 possessions a game, and they weren't taking threes like that. But it just doesn't matter anymore, you know.
Apparently, someone forgot about Peja Stojakovic on that team.
He was on the team.
Racking up 1.8 threes per game. Absolute high volume.
He had a few big games in the playoffs, if I remember correctly. It's the Timberwolves.
All right. T-Wolves going T-Wolves.
I feel like they've made moves to get better, which I always respect. I always like when teams do things to get better. The price tag is whatever. But I mean, I don't know. Rudy Gobert caps you. Playoff wise, we've seen this happen. Are the Timberwolves good enough surrounding? I think the difference is, are the Timberwolves good enough to surround him with players that make up for that? And I don't think they're that crushingly good yet. They're good, win 50 games, but I don't know if they can overwhelm other teams come playoff time.
Yeah, for sure. They're definitely looking like a regular season team. I just want to push back slightly when you said that Rudy Gobert caps you as a playoff team. I think. That's sort of the wrong way of assessing it. I think it's more so that he so elevates you as a regular season team that, you know, it sort of elevates you beyond their actual team quality. His ability to just absolutely carry a defense in the regular season pushes you so far up as a regular season team that once you mitigate that, it's not that he's bringing you down, it's just that he can't do all of that heavy lifting in the playoffs.
That's a great point. He makes 5 seeds, 1 seeds, and then they get they're disappointing.
Yeah, like, he guarantees you top 10 in defense.
I just want to read off some of their chart, because they made a huge trade But they still have a very deep,
Salomo, beyond... Kyle Anderson, he's back.
Yeah.
Not back, but he's here.
We could project a starting five of them of Rudy Gobert, Karl Anthony Towns, Slow-Mo, D'Angelo Russell, and Anthony Edwards. And that is a really good starting five. Coming off the bench, we go with Bryn Forbes, Austin Rivers, Jaden McDaniels, Torian Prince.
You're losing me, Nate.
I mean, Jaden McDaniels is really solid. Torian Prince can play some defense, or maybe he could have 2 years ago. We keep saying that. But Jaden McDaniels is really good. And Bryn Forbes can have a role as a shooter. Austin Rivers is...
Coming to play some defense.
Yeah, he'll come in and play some defense.
He's actually... He's recreated his shot, too. He's reworked his jump shot. It's looking a lot better. See, I've been watching all the Instagram videos. It's looking good.
I don't know if it's Gobert too. That comes off the floor or if it's Karl Anthony Towns.
I feel like that's problematic when your two best players can't. Like, we're wondering if they can play together.
Oh, they can definitely play together. But, you know, I'm just thinking, you know, if you want to go more defense or if you want to go more offense, like, I think this team makes the second round. We've got four teams ahead of them. And I think we all have four teams ahead of them. But I think this is a really good squad.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that.
I just want to mention, too, like, Anthony Edwards is coming into his third season in the NBA. He made his first playoffs last year and looked absolutely built for it. There's a non-zero chance that he is the best player on this team into this season. And he could be, you know, one of the five best shooting guards in the league. When you've got two of the top five centers in the league, one of the five best shooting guards in the league, and some, you know, a few complimentary players, they could be really tough. The way that they do succeed in the playoffs is if Anthony Edwards is that guy. And there's a well above, you know, non-zero chance that he's that awesome.
He was incredible.
Just imagine a little Horn series action. We've got Carl coming with a little pick and pop. You got Gobert rolling. You got his strong screen for that screen assist. Edwards is, you know, careening down the lane. And then he's kicking to either Russell or Bryn Forbes in the corner. It's a solid, solid team. Like, your teams are really going to struggle to stop these guys. And if Towns keeps them as a top 10 defense, or not Towns, sorry, Gobert keeps them as a top 10 defense, like, they're going to be really good.
My one issue with the team, other than kind of the strange, just they have two centers. That's strange. People usually don't do that. Is D'Angelo Russell still being, he's going to be a big part of their offense. And that does worry me because he's not very good. I think there's going to be a... Really, there's going to be a ceiling. There's going to be a ceiling on their offense come playoff time if D'Angelo Russell has to shoot the ball 12 times, or if he thinks he can take shots at the end of games.
Yeah, I've always been lower on Russell, but I think Gobert is a really awesome fit for him, and that he can cover up for him as his terrible point of attack defense, or just terrible perimeter defense. Like, D'Angelo Russell gets blown by all the time, and now you've got the best backside defender in the league, the best rim protector in the league to cover up for that. And the other thing that D'Angelo Russell, low-key, is like a really excellent passer. And I think in pick and roll with Gobert, who's one of the best roll men and has so much rim gravity, I think a Gobert-Russell pick and roll could be really devastating. And if you can sort of run that as sort of a second unit, you know, that could be a really good option as well.
Man, talking us into the Timberwolves, check it out.
They're going to be good. They're going to be like top 10 on both ends of the floor.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still, you know, preseason. We haven't even had training camps. Like, everything is so far away that, hey, this is the time to be talked into stuff.
Yeah. And they were the seventh best offense last year. And did they get worse on offense? Maybe slightly. And now they're guaranteed top 10 in defense. So you add a guaranteed top 10 defense. They were the fifth best team post trade deadline on offense.
And I don't even know I buy that they got worse on offense. They're just, I'm much higher in Gobert's offense because of what he opens up from his lob catching abilities and screen setting. So I do have one team that I have worse than these guys. Looks like I do, and look like Dylan does. The team that I've got worse than them is the Phoenix Suns, who come in with 53 expected wins from our grouping, 49 from me, 54 from Aaron, 56 from Dylan. And my lack of faith in them really just comes from Chris Paul is another year older, and I didn't see anyone else really stepping up or advancing their game last year. You know, Aaron, to your point on TikTok, just because young players get a year older doesn't mean they get better. And I don't really feel like we saw any other Suns take a step forward from the previous season to last season. And so I'm not really expecting them to take another step forward. Maybe Ayton takes a small step forward, but I don't know. I'm kind of expecting a little bit of regression, actually a fair amount of regression, to have them drop from 64 wins down to 50.
That's what I was going to say, in a sense where, yeah, they're going to regress. I have them going down 10 wins. That's a lot of wins just to disappear. I anticipate they're going to keep Ayton and he's just going to be upset. If they trade him, I can adjust it. But the 54 wins came from essentially just running it back. And they added Damian Lee and Josh Okogie. Pretty good players. They're okay.
Yeah.
I think it's everyone sort of expects them to be a little bit worse this year. But like you said, Nate, this team won 64 games last year. They were one of the best regular season teams in like the last decade. By point differential, they were absolutely absurd. You know, they were by far the best team in the league. And they haven't done anything that should substantially make that a lot worse. Chris Paul is getting older. He'll be worse again. And maybe they lose some of that clutch heroics as well that really bolstered them. You know, they had a 60-win point differential, so they outplayed that pretty thoroughly with some great clutch play. And Ayton could really be an issue. If they are to improve, I think it's got to come from Mikal Bridges. If he becomes a legitimate sort of third ball handler and creator, that's where they could take another step forward, particularly as a playoff team. But like, they were awesome last year, and they shouldn't be substantially worse.
I think, once again, I do also just keep getting back to the same point of other teams are going to be healthy. Some of these wins are going to disappear from teams, provided everyone is healthy. And we're assuming health for the Lakers. We're assuming the Clippers guys are back. We're assuming the Warriors guys are healthier. Or Denver is healthier. Like, four teams got substantially better just from having their own internal health. That's not even bringing up the Blazers, Pelican. Like, there are going to be less win for some of these high-end Eastern Conference or Western Conference teams. But yeah, I mean, the Suns are what they are. There's nothing too flash. Welcome back, Dario Saric, my guy. Let's go.
One of the best Suns ever.
He actually could be really nice for him. And in the last season, they, for some random reason, over the entire season, were just really good defensively when he was at the five. And so their defense should be really good again. And he offers quite a bit on offense, obviously, also.
I'm still a Saric believer in the sense that the Suns would have won the finals if he was healthy. They couldn't stop Giannis. They couldn't. They needed just someone who was like 6'9", 6'10". And once he got hurt, that was it. Because the second Ayton left the floor, it was just... it's over.
Yeah.
Could have got Bismack Biyombo.
Could have been.
All right. Well, not too much to discuss with Phoenix. So, Dylan, you have the Denver Nuggets with 48 wins. So you have them behind Dallas, behind Memphis, behind Minnesota, and behind Phoenix. Aaron and I are lock and step with 56 each. They average out to 53.3. It's just a hair ahead of where we have Phoenix. Why so low?
How are they going to get a lot better than they were last year?
They're going to play Jamal Murray opposed to...
Jamal Murray's back, so they'll be better on offense, but...
They were playing G League players last year, because Jokic
They're playing Monte Morris. Monte Morris is, we were just saying, one of the best backup point guards in the league.
You want starting point guards, not backup point guards. Jamal Murray's a starting point guard.
Yeah. Will Barton was their second leading minutes per game guy. Like, Will, Aaron Gordon, Monte Morris, Jeff Green...
Jeff Green. God, no. See, that's the issue. Is they have to play Jeff Green. You know, if Jeff Green is responsible for anything that you, any sort of success, you're screwed. It's not going to go well. The fact they won 48 games last year is a miracle.
He wasn't even the best Jay Green on their team last season.
And that, it's true. Jermichael Green.
Did any of you guys grow up watching Peanuts, Charlie Brown?
No, I mean, obviously I know what it is, but I didn't grow up watching it.
All right. You know, like, the joke of Charlie Brown running up to kick the football and, like, Lucy pulls it out of his way?
Of course.
That's me in Denver. I'm like, no. I'm not going to fall for it this year. Denver's not going to be that good. And then I look at them and I'm like, how are they going to be meaningfully better? Well, they can play two really good offensive players in Murray and Jokic and then surround them with Brown, KCP, and Gordon. And that's a phenomenal defensive lineup. Maybe you want to sacrifice a little bit of the offense. Maybe you want to sacrifice a little bit of the defense and you pull out Bruce Brown and you put in Michael Porter Jr. Like, they have some options now. I mean, the fact that they have DeAndre Jordan is wild. We don't need to address it. We just forget that he's there.
Oh, God, I hope he doesn't play.
Dylan's factoring in the DeAndre Jordan effect, which is 10 more losses than we're anticipating.
I had to take off 10 wins because they're playing DeAndre Jordan as their backup five.
I love KCP and Bruce Brown for them. I think the Bruce Brown signing was just incredible. He was so important to the Nets. I feel like he had a much bigger role than he should have for that team. And now I think he can just really excel as someone who kind of, you know, plays good defense and rebounds and can knock down threes in the corner at a decent enough clip. And KCP is a good defensive player. And Will Barton, well, the offensive numbers are good. Little bit of a black hole offensively, mm-hmm. By taking shots that he really shouldn't have. And with Jamal Murray probably taking those shots, I like that more. And they also have one of the three best players in the world, if not top two, in Jokic. And Ish Smith.
There is a black hole player that I will not stop saying this until he signs somewhere else, but I want them to sign Carmelo Anthony to be that off the bench scorer. I feel like he embraced it with the Lakers. He showed he has a little bit left. If he goes back and wears 7, it can clear up the whole who gets the retired number 15, which, I mean, it's Jokic, but it's kind of a shame that they can't also retire Carmelo's jersey.
Oh, yeah, that's really dumb.
Yeah. Yeah, they're both number 15. So he needs to go play 1 year in 7. And then they can just retire 7 instead. And it'd be a little bit weird, but like...
That would resolve that issue. That is really awkward that... Are they just not going to retire Carmelo's jersey because Jokic wears it?
I don't know.
Guess so. Jokic is a hell of a lot better than Carmelo.
I mean, maybe you could wait till they both retire and then like do a...
Yeah, retire it for both of them.
Yeah. But that feels kind of like a weird slap in the face to Melo to be like, listen, we're retiring it, but you're the second number 15.
Yeah. Or maybe they just say, screw you, you wanted to get traded, ask the Knicks to retire your jersey, bitch.
Oh my God. Screw you.
I don't think the Nuggets should retire Carmelo's number. I'm not like all in on that. He's a good player. Let's not get ahead of ourselves.
Let me see what numbers the Nuggets have retired. The Nuggets have retired Alex English, Lafayette Lever, good old Solid. Fat Lever, David Thompson, Byron Beck, who played one season and averaged 4.7 points in 53 games.
Guessing we have something else going on there. What's his name?
Byron Beck. They retired Dan Issel, Dikembe Mutombo, and they also have a tribute to Doug Moe in the rafters for his coaching stint there. I guess Carmelo doesn't quite hit those levels. I mean, David Thompson is a 2-time All-NBA first team and 3-time All-Star. I feel like Carmelo's got to be similar to that in production-wise, as well as to Lafayette and Lever. Like, was he that much worse than Alex English? English got 11 seasons in Denver. Carmelo only had, 7.5?
Do you want to hear the Byron Beck story?
Yeah.
So he is one of 6 players, along with Louis Dampier, Gerald Govan. But I should not have attempted this. These names are way too hard. Bob Nitolicki and Stu Johnson and Freddie Lewis, who participated in all 9 seasons of the original ABA Denver Rockets and Nuggets. He was a 2-time ABA All-Star.
Still feels weird.
It feels weird. I guess he's one of the original Nuggets, essentially.
He's like the Nuggets Udonis Haslem. You know, like Haslem's gonna have his number retired and people in like 50 years are gonna be like, who the fuck is Udonis Haslem?
You know, I realize what it is. The website I was looking at was just telling his NBA stuff. But he played
ABA numbers are good?
ABA numbers are good. Okay. Yeah, when you said he played his whole career, like I was looking at just the one season where he got 53 games and averaging 9 minutes. But if you add in the ABA numbers, it's not great. But all right, the founding member, you give a nod to the old guys. Looking at you, Lakers, you still need to retire Mikan's jersey. But all right, that makes more sense.
He got his number retired in 1977. Pretty much as he retired.
Yeah.
All right. Who is our 3 seed? Nate, who is our 3 seed?
That was Denver. Denver was 3.
Oh, shoot.
So
we have 2 left.
We went Spurs, Thunder, Rockets, Jazz, Kings, Blazers, Lakers, Pelicans, Mavs, Grizzlies, Timberwolves, Suns, Nuggets, and now the Clippers. I got them at 53. You have them at 52. Dylan, you've got them at 56 for an average score of 53.6. So we have less than 1 point separating the Clippers, Nuggets, and Suns. John Wall not blowing anyone away? Or is John Wall blowing everyone away?
He makes me nervous. I think the potential is incredible, but he hasn't played in a long time. We know he can't shoot. I don't know if that's changed. There's a world where John Wall is like Westbrook-esque. I know the decision-making won't be as bad. I think he's a better playmaker. But he might just be horrible offensively, and that scares me. Also, losing Hartenstein. Is that how you pronounce it? There's your extra syllables in there.
I feel like it's like Hartenstein.
Hartenstein. He defended the rim really well. And without him, I don't know who's going to defend the paint. Those are my concerns.
Yeah, I mean, firstly, to the wall point, if this goes terribly, like, you don't have to play them. This Clippers team, I want to argue, is one of the deepest teams of all time. Like, 1 through 10 is absurd. Like, their 10th man is, like, Terrence Mann, I guess, who would start for, like, you know,
the Lakers.
10 teams in the league. The Lakers and the Kings.
No, he's not starting.
yeah, like, these guys are absurdly deep. They've got 2 top 10 players in the league if they're healthy. The way that this gets absurd is if everything goes well. Like, they're top 3 on like both ends of the floor if everything goes perfectly. Most likely we get like 130 combined games out of Kawhi and Paul George, which is going to drop them down a little bit. But they are so deep that they can withstand, like, as long as those guys don't go out together, like, they're still going to be a really good team. And they are one of 2 teams that I projected to be top 5 on both offense and defense.
The depth, just, all right, position by position. Starting point, or like point guard, either John Wall or Reggie Jackson. Hey, for an A-B scenario, you play them both 24 minutes. That's great. Shooting guard, and I'm going to do the positions how I feel like doing these positions because Paul George is not a shooting guard. You can either go defense with Nick Batum or offense with Powell. I picture Powell coming off the bench for that spark plug scoring, and like that is an amazing position to have Powell in. Small forward, we can go Kawhi.
You forgot Nuke Kennard, one of the best shooters in the league, if you just need someone to bomb threes.
I mean, that's kind of where I was getting, is the fact that you don't even need Luke Kennard. Like, he's number 5 if in this. And then you go to the forwards where you've got Kawhi and Paul. I don't care who you want to say is starter, small forward, starting power forward. And then off the bench, you've got Robert Covington and Marcus Morris, which, like, those are 4 starting caliber players. I mean, like, 2 All-NBA first team, second team guys, and then 2 other starters. And then at center, Ivanča Zubac, like, Zoo's fine. Zoo's above average. But, like, that's really solid. You could put Covington as your starting center and go small ball for time. I also am just now noticing that they signed Moses Brown. Do you guys remember the Moses Brown month?
I do. Still waiting for it. Every time he gets traded, everyone's like, this is it. Moses Brown's about to break out. It's not happening.
It's happening.
Is it happening? Okay. Are we kicking the football again?
Listen, maybe it doesn't happen, but from March 21st to April 21st, he played 18 games for the Oklahoma City Thunder back in 2021, and averaged 10 points and 10.9 rebounds. Like, that's the big man that you just scoop up off the scrap heap. Like, hey, he doesn't even have to do that, but to be the like, just scrap heap option, literally? Like,
yeah.
We named 12 players in this.
We're talking about a team that, without Kawhi Leonard and only with a little bit of Paul George, still won 42 games. And I feel like my 52-win prediction is being, like, really cautious with kind of a fragile team in terms of health.
Yeah. And also just, like, whether they will actually try to win regular season games. Like, they may just take it really easy because this is obviously a team that's trying to win a championship. Like, they do not care whatsoever about regular season record. But, yeah, like, on paper could be the best team in the league. I don't think they'll try for it. You know, health is always a concern. Kawhi's probably not going to play more than like 65 games. Like I said, you know, you get 130 games out of Kawhi and Paul George combined. And so you've got to dock them a little bit for that. But like, this team is absurd.
Yeah. It is kind of wild though that none of us put them as our number one. And that's just kind of faith in the Golden State system, who we all collectively has number one. I've got them at 63 wins. Aaron, you've got 55. Dylan, you've got 57.
I have Denver as the one seed in the West.
Do you?
I do. 56 wins.
Oh,
I feel like
partially
I think Denver is going to give a shit about the one seed, where the Warriors probably don't care.
Yeah, that's fair.
Just part of it.
I actually really struggle to find a one seed because I think the teams that are the best in the West are Golden State and the Clippers, and I don't think either of them care about regular season wins at this point. Golden State will be awesome again on defense when they are trying and they've got decent, you know, players around their guys. They'll be, you know, they're just awesome defensively. And so I project that again. And then the offense will be better than it was last year, by virtue of having just better health. They filled out their roster pretty nicely. they picked up DiVincenzo.
Don't start, Dylan. You're starting to convince yourself.
They picked up DiVincenzo, who may just really suck. He might be like a, 48% true shooting guy who, doesn't try on defense. But there is a world in which he has a decent handle. He plays really hard defense. He's like really good at navigating screens, which is awesome to have as a point of attack defender. He's athletic. He can run in transition. Like he knows how to play as well. Like, he's a pretty smart player, low-key. Like, you don't think about it because some of the shot selection is not that good, but he can read the floor. He knows when to cut. He knows where to be on defense. That's the kind of player that succeeds for the Warriors. And so if you, put him into the Gary Payton role where he just has to play defense and take his opportunities, except he's a better ball handler, a better shooter, that could be really awesome for them.
Well, it could be. Yeah. There's potential there, and it sucks because the Kings can't get that out of him, but of course the Warriors can. We're putting a lot of faith in the Warriors young guys, because Bielitsa's gone, and Gary Payton, Iguodala's retired, correct? He's non-committal on his return. I heard from that. Even so, I don't think that moves the needle. Otto Porter, Damian Lee, and Juan Toscano-Anderson, and they're kind of like the next people step up with Wiseman and Moody and Kuminga. It'd be interesting to see if those guys can handle it. I think they can, but it's, yeah.
Yeah, they've got six really good players, and then they don't have to ask too much from Kuminga, Moody, Jamichael Green, DiVincenzo. Like, they don't have to ask too much of those guys. And if they can outperform their expectations, then that just elevates them even more.
I think they have a really nice mix of guys that are good. Like, Wiggins, his whole career has kind of been the laissez-faire guy. But he had some moments where he really showed his hunger last year, where he was jamming it down in the playoffs and really excited. And there's a chance that this is the Wiggins year. Kind of, I'm trying to think of another historical example, but kind of how the Warriors set up JaVale McGee and we're like, hey, we're just going to feed you and we're going to do this. Or when they had Boogie and they're like, hey, we're just going to let Boogie vibe out and we're going to compliment him. I could see Clay and Steph and Draymond really kind of turning over the car key to Wiggins if he wants to get going, to Kuminga and to, I think the young guys are really going to want, I think Jordan Poole is really going to want it. And man, if you're the fourth, fifth guy out there and you really want it and your stars are going to let you have it, that is just such a comfortable environment to play in because they can step in and keep the ship going. And so you have just have the maximum amount of freedom to do as you please. And I think that's going to be a really fun environment to be a part of and just good vibes all around. So maybe my 63 wins a bit high, but it just, when this team was healthy with those three guys, we saw 72, and I'm ready for that kind of clicking, that chemistry. I think Clay wants to have a really good year again this year. So I think there's gonna be enough people hungry for it that they could really make a high regular season run.
Yeah. The only thing that really held me back from going pushing into that plus 61 territory is I don't think they really want to. This is another team where, and that's why I really struggle for a one seed, is who is really good but also wants to win. Maybe it'll just be Phoenix again, or maybe it will be Denver. But yeah, I think for sure
or Minnesota.
Yeah, or it could be Minnesota. It's got to be someone, and the two best teams in this conference, I don't think really care about it.
There's a real chance in Minnesota, given what Dylan said, what Gobert does in the regular season, what he did for Utah. Totally possible.
He wants it. They want it.
I hope Rudy Gobert figures it out on offense. Can you guys imagine, not to get ridiculous, but if he just started doing post hooks and he could just do those over anybody, all of a sudden he's one of the best players in the league.
He just goes to the Kareem school of post hooks and figures it out.
It doesn't have to be over anyone, but the fact that he can't do it over, that he can't do it over anyone. if he can just figure out how to steal and back down a smaller guy and finish over him, that's all you really need. The way that Gobert gets played off the floor offensively is when teams switch and then he can't punish the smaller player. So if he can just, I hope he's just in a gym, just, backing down 5'6" trainers and shooting baby hooks.
Maybe Minnesota will let him do it. Just let him get better at it. Practice in game. Let him shoot 5 for 15 and just try to get going.
So he does not shoot much from the mid range, very, very little. I don't even know what the math is, but I'm going to guess just by the percentages, he shot four shots in that 10 to 16 in foot range because he shot a really strong percentage.
I can tell you.
75%.
He shot, of 10 to 16 footers, he shot for his career 0.009%.
Well, last season, and it was 0.008, and he ended up with 75%. So that tells me he shot either four or eight, a nice, clean, small number. But his free throw percentage was up to 69%. Like, he has a decent enough touch that I could see him, you know, really developing some sort of a mid-range if you ever wanted him to. But he's one of the most efficient scorers we have because throw him lob. You just need the rest of your offense to keep clicking. And you need someone else to play defense. Like, he's a top 15 to 25 player. Like, how much better does he need to get? I think you just got to put him with better people around him. And like, oh man, your other wing defenders can't be Jordan Clarkson and Bojan Bogdanovic. Like, you gotta have something more substantial than that on defense. And like, I think it'll be fine. I think this is the Gobert renaissance.
I'm excited. I hope they do it.
Yeah. All right. So that's the West. Why don't we go, who do we expect to be representing the West in the NBA finals?
I'll stick with Denver. I feel like they've just gotten kind of shortchanged for a long time. If any of these teams as of late with Jokic are built to his liking, it's this one. I think this one's going to play better defense than the bubble one. I like Bruce Brown. Huge Bruce Brown guy. that's my reasoning.
Yeah, there are very few teams where Bruce Brown works, and this is one of them.
Dylan, are you going to take the Clippers?
Yeah, I kind of have to, but
all right.
If they're healthy, they'll be the best team in the league. Whether they're healthy or not is difficult to say.
Then, just for contrarian's sake, I will go with the Golden State Warriors. You saw them do it last year. You still have the versatility. The middle-aged guys of Poole, Wiggins, and Looney really showed out in the playoffs, and I think they could do it again. If the young guys of Kuminga, Wiseman, and Moody do anything, like, they're going to be really good.
Yeah. Well, an interesting flow-on effect if the Warriors do go out and just win another championship is that takes Steph past LeBron, which I don't think he would appreciate. So maybe that's where he really starts to put some pressure on the organization or starts looking for other alternatives.
Yeah, Steph, if with another ring, you put him above Magic at that point. He's the best point guard ever.
Well, guys, just look out. The Hornets are going to make some really dumb trade. It's not where Jordan could be like, LeBron's not better than me. He's not even better than Curry.
They rectify the LaMelo and Wiseman mistake.
Yeah. You know, send him over Gordon Hayward for nothing. You send him with a bundle of cash. Like, we'll pay this salary too. Just here.
Hey, Gordon. Now you're gone too far. Messing with LeBron's one thing, but having to pay money, that's beyond Michael Jordan, okay?
He'll have used offshore bookies to, like, put money down on the Warriors before the season too. Like, he'll get the money back. It'll be okay. Well, gentlemen, where can they find you? Aaron?
Hospital chairs on TikTok. Just how I Dylan? Said it.
It's almost summer. I'm going to be out in the sun.
Good. Sun's out, guns out, buns out. Have a great one.